You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
You're listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up.
Miami's got the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever.
Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on Sunday, May the 15th. I am your host, Michael Leva, joined by your in-house draft guru, Dante Colanelli. Dante, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here talking draft recap. It feels like it's been a while. I've had a chance to process Miami's very few picks, and you know, I'm excited to talk about them. It should be a good time.
Yeah, shouldn't be a long show. We're not going to be a ton of players to talk about here, but it is worth going over a few of the names. But first, as always, before we start, a big shout out to everyone watching and listening at finheaven.com. Everyone go to finheaven.com, the largest Miami Dolphins message board on the internet. Also, a big shout out to everyone on the I Am a Miami Dolphins Fan Facebook group run by the great Carlos Hernandez. If you're on Facebook, be sure to check that out for all of your Miami Dolphins needs. And always, if you're watching on the Dolphins Talk YouTube channel, thank you. Be sure to subscribe to the channel, smash that like button, and also hit the alert bell so when we go live like this, you can watch us and interact with us as we go. So, Miami Dolphins only had a few picks. First pick came in round three, and it was one of the players we mentioned prior to the draft, and there was mock drafts having him go anywhere from round two to round four, so wide range of opinions on him, and he falls to him with round three, pick 102, linebacker Channing Tindall out of Georgia. Dante, what are your thoughts on this pick for Miami? I like the pick. I think it's a good fit for them. I think they needed some youth at linebacker, some speed. And for pick 102, I think you can't ask for anything more, really.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, if you watch my appearances on this show, whether that is the pregame show with Tom or when we do draft prep, I'm constantly talking about speed on both sides of the ball and how I think the Dolphins need to get faster. Channing Tindall helps you do that. One of the most athletic linebackers in this class. He tested in the 90th percentile in a lot of his athletic testing at the combine. So this is a guy who's able to run sideline to sideline for you. You know, coming into this draft, the Dolphins only had one player on the second level who could do that, and Jerome Baker. They had some safeties who would creep up to the second level and could give you that type of stuff. So that's something that Brandon Jones was doing a lot of. But, you know, you really want to see that from your linebacking group. And I think Tindall gives you that. Now, the problem with Tindall right now is that you probably don't want him quite being a true linebacker just yet. If you dive into the Georgia film, you'll see that he's just a tick slow sometimes, just processing the run, getting downhill, recognizing when ball fakes are coming, dealing with motion, different things like that. It's nothing bad, but these are the types of things you're going to have to deal with when you're making your first pick outside the top 100. I mean, you're drafting players that, you know, maybe you aren't going to see more than 50% of snaps, you know, as long as there's no injuries, right? So for me, Tindall right now, I think he gives you a little bit of a hybrid edge linebacker type role, which is obviously something that Miami really likes, right? Like that's kind of their prototype. So right now, I think he's probably a little bit closer to Andrew Van Ginkle than Jerome Baker. But unlike Andrew Van Ginkle, he has the athletic ceiling to take that jump to be that guy next to Jerome Baker to where you can run those guys and feel comfortable about your ability to cover sideline to sideline, both against the run and the pass. So Tindall is going to take some time. I don't know if we'll see him as a traditional linebacker a lot early, but where we will see him is as a blitzer, as a guy who can line up all over the line of scrimmage. He can stand up, he can rush the edge, and you like his athleticism. Maybe we'll see him on tight ends in some matchup scenarios. I don't know. But there's a lot that you can do with him that I think the Dolphins would really, really benefit from on the second level. You're just going to have to take some time to develop him mentally to where he's a consistent three-down player for you and he's not a liability in any one area. But again, that's what you get when you're drafting outside the top 100 with your first selection, players that are going to need a little bit of development.
So more of a situational player in year one, where you put him on the field in certain sub packages where he can, where you can get the most out of him. You just don't line him up at linebacker as like an every down guy, which makes sense for a guy at pick 102. But I think the future there, the ceiling, I don't want to say it's, you know, super high, but I think there's a ceiling there where he can grow as a player and be a more of an every down contributor in a year or two. I do see that with him. You agree?
Yeah, sorry, my audio. my audio decided to dip out there for a second. But yeah, no, I definitely agree, right? I think that this is a player with, like, I don't know, I would say like solid starter ceiling, right? And I think you feel good about him and Jerome Baker in the middle. Are they the, are they going to be the best linebackers in the world? Are they going to be, you know, Zach Thomas? No, probably not. They're not going to have that impact. But frankly, I mean, you don't really want Zach Thomas in today's NFL. You want guys who are a little bit leaner, a little bit more athletic, guys who play more in coverage. And that's probably what you're getting with Tyndall and Baker. It's just the nature of the game. And I think that the, you know, if you told me, look, the Dolphins are going to pay Jerome Baker a mid-level linebacker contract, because that's what's going to end up being by the time it's up, because guys are going to keep getting paid over him. Worse players, by the way, are going to keep getting paid more money than Jerome Baker. And then you have Channing Tyndall on a third-round pick. If you told me that's your starting linebacker duo for the next 2 to 3 years, I mean, I think that's about as good as you can ask for. It's not a ton of money invested in that position, but it's still two quality players who fit the trajectory of the NFL, and you can always keep an Alandon Roberts type behind those guys who you can put in certain packages and still do this, the type of stuff that you like to do with that player if you're Miami. So, yeah, I mean, this one makes a lot of sense. This was my favorite pick of the draft, and it's easy to say that given he was the highest player taken. I think he was the best player taken, especially when, you know, half the draft class are seventh-round picks that I, you know, one of them I had to Google when they got selected. So, you know what I mean, right? But, like, you know, Tyndall is a guy who – I really think this is a good pick, right? It makes sense from scheme. It makes sense from need. It's about as good as you're going to get at pick 102. He's not a world breaker. Don't think he's going to be a Hall of Fame or anything like that, but he's a solid player. If you get solid starter reps from a guy you selected outside the top 100, that's absolutely a win. And I think that's Tyndall's ceiling. So I think for Miami, look, it's the nature of the beast. You traded all your picks for Tyreek Hill. You end up with Channing Tyndall outside the top 100.
Yep. And in round four, pick 125, I don't know if a lot of fans thought Miami go wide receiver in this draft, but when you look at their wide receivers, outside of Hill, outside of Waddle, outside of Cedric Wilson, the rest of the names are really guys who have no ties to this new staff. Lynn Bowden Jr. wasn't here with his previous staff. Preston Williams wasn't here with his previous staff. They have no real strong ties to them. So when they took Eric Isakoma out of Texas Tech, it kind of makes some sense. It's a guy who I think he averaged like 10 yards a run in his 13 runs last year. So you got a little something there with him, and just has some size and is a wide receiver. I think it's like a wide receiver 4 or 5 with this staff who they might like more than some of the guys they inherited. So what were your thoughts on this pick here in round four?
Yeah, I think that this pick for me made a lot more sense when I finished doing my film evaluation on him. He was a player that I only watched 2 games of, so I kind of had a preliminary report, and I knew what type of player he was. But I think 2 things jump out to me. One, we talked about this on the pre-draft show, right? It's just like the Dolphins might just go BPA, right? Like they might just sit there and be like, you know what? We're too far down the draft to get picky. We're going to take the best player on my board. This strikes me as that type of pick where they just sat down and they were like, you know what? The Texas Tech kid's the highest ranked player on our board. We're just going to draft him at 125. And we're going to go with it. So that was my first thought. My second thought was, and a lot of people really gave me a lot of pushback on this. I tweeted that I think he's a Devontae Parker replacement. And a lot of people got mad at me because of things like, well, he's really good at yak and he makes really good carries. If you sit down and if you watch his film, the best plays that he makes is mossing people down the field at the catch point using his size as an outside X receiver. Those are his best reps at Texas Tech. They are. This is not a guy who is a short separator, route runner type player. He's not that fast either. He ran okay at Texas Tech's pro day. He didn't run at the combine. He doesn't look that fast on film. This is not a guy who's, you know, creating a ton of separation. Texas Tech's offense does a lot of work for him, creating separation for him. So again, to me, when I look at him as a player who is going to come into Miami, he strikes me as the outside guy, right? Like, they don't trust Preston Williams. Like you said, they trade Devontae Parker to New England. Someone's got to be able to be that catch point, big bodied guy. Now, that's not to say that he can't do more, right? I think a lot of people, you know, thought that I was like typecasting him as like only that type of player, but that is his best skill set. Those are his best traits. He's more elusive than Devontae Parker in the open field, and he has more experience, you know, working on manufactured touches and things like that, right? Which is a staple of the Mike McDaniel offense. So he's got bonus traits. He's got things that you like that make him a little bit more well-rounded than a player like Devontae Parker. So I think role-wise, I think he should be getting those outside X reps. He should be catching the back shoulder throws from Tua. He should be catching the, you know, the deep post, stuff like that. And you're going to run Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle on those reps. All these receivers are going to get moved around. They're all going to do different things, right? So it's not like this stiff, you know, forced into a certain box role that like we saw with previous Dolphin stats, right? Guys are going to get moved. They're going to do different things. And I understand that. When you look at this kid's best traits, it is going up at the catch point, making plays up there. He is great in contested catch scenarios. It's really a 70-30 ball when you throw it up to him in college. Now, how does that translate to the NFL? I'm not sure, but we'll see. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, he could be, you know, the Deebo Samuel type guy. And it's like, look, I've heard enough of Deebo Samuel. I don't want to hear
it.
I'm so sick of hearing that. It's ridiculous. This kid's nowhere near the even the prospect. Let's separate the NFL player, right? I had a high second round grade on Deebo Samuel, probably a little bit too low. This kid, not even close to the type of prospect, athlete, body, nothing along those lines or close to Deebo Samuel. Additionally, if you're going to manufacture touches for players, right, you are banking on their talent overriding the talent of the defense, because manufactured touches are bubble screens, they're jet sweeps. Their, you know, touch passes, right? There's these things that, you know what, the kid's probably going to have to make a couple people miss to pick up any positive yards before he can open up his stride. I don't know about you, Mike. I'm giving those touches to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. There's not a lot of them to go around. There's probably going to be about 8 to 10 a game, and that's probably going to be a lot. It's probably going to be somewhere closer to 6 or 7. I'm giving those touches to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. I'm not giving those touches to some fourth round pick out of Texas Tech. Give me a break. I mean, you know, like, and then this is not a knock on the kid. Maybe he develops and down the line, you know what, maybe the Dolphins sit down one day and they're like, you know what, we really like the way this kid developed. We're not going to give Jalen Waddle a second contract, or we're not going to give Cedric Wilson a second contract, or we're going to move on from Lynn Bowden and we're going to give his touches to this kid. Maybe that's what ends up happening. But this year, why am I giving handoff touches to this kid when I have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle? That's the part that bothers me. And that's why I said that this is a Devontae Parker type player for the Dolphins. It doesn't mean he can't do other stuff, but if you're going to use him the way that he should be used, he should be used as an outside X receiver who's physical at the catch point and can body people for his size. And again, like, and barring any injury, I don't want to see this kid get a single jet pass. Every single one of those should be going to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill or Cedric Wilson or Lynn Bowden. He's fifth on my list of players who should be getting a jet touch pass from this Dolphins offense. And it's not to say that he's bad at it or that he can't do it. I'm just saying there's just not this year on the roster. Yes.
Just not this year. Right. Just not this year. And I think with this pick as well, one thing I think fans of the Dolphins have to sort of shift their mindset and come to understand that what Miami did in 2020 is they screwed this up. When you get a rookie quarterback, I don't care if it's Fields, Tua, Herbert, Joe Burrow, whoever, you as an organization must do a few things. One, you got to give the kid some protection up front. Two, you have to give him a veteran quarterbacks coach. And three, you better give him as many weapons as possible to build around that kid to give him every chance of success. In 2020, the Dolphins did what, 0 for 3. They gave him one of the worst offensive lines in the league. They didn't give him a veteran quarterback coach, and they gave him literally no weapons. What the Miami Dolphins are doing now is they're trying to correct that. They gave him a very good quarterbacks coach who's been in this league forever. They're trying to fix the offensive line. It's still a work in progress, but they made some steps this offseason, at least with Armstead and Connor. So it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's done. And they have loaded up on weapons. And this is just another weapon. You watch the teams that go far in the playoffs. You watch the teams that are contending in the playoffs, win Super Bowls. They have weapons on top of weapons on top of weapons, and you never stop drafting weapons. You can never have enough. Not that this kid's going to be a superstar, but as a fourth or a fifth, we'll take him too. Throw him in the mix. Throw him in there with Lynn Bowden. Throw him in there with Preston Williams. On top of Hill, Wilson, Waddle, and all the tight ends they got. You never have enough weapons. And if this kid is going to succeed a quarterback, you have to give him as much help as possible. If that means at round four, taking a wide receiver when it's really not the biggest need on your roster, oh, well, we're going to add another wide receiver next because we need to become a team that is shaped like all the teams that win in this league. And we haven't been in a long time. And now we have a staff at least understands this and knows maybe it's the right guy, maybe it's not. But we're going to, you know, try to build this thing the way it should be built.
I agree. I mean, I think that, again, right, like look at the Kansas City model. Obviously, Tua is not Patrick Mahomes, but, I mean, they just have guy after guy after guy, right? It's not Tyreek Hill, it's Mecole Hardman. If it's not him, it's Byron Pringle. They had Sammy Watkins that 1 year. You know, they got a couple of tight ends who do something behind Kelsey, right? It's just, it's guy after guy after guy. And even the 49ers were like that, right? Now, the 49ers were able to do that with a bunch of non-household names. But even they were like that, right? They had three running backs, a bunch of receivers, multiple tight ends, week after week after week. It's just, oh, well, it's this guy who went for 800 this week. Now it's this guy, right? And again, like those are what the good teams do. And that's what the Dolphins are trying to do. And again, if you look at the wide receiver market too, there is going to come a point where the Dolphins are going to have to decide if they're going to pay Jaylen Waddle a big time contract. And I'm not saying they should or should not. That's a conversation for another day. But if you're the Dolphins,
you can only pay so many.
Yeah, you can only pay so many of those guys, and you already paid one. By the way, you know, you're going to have to make a decision on Tua's contract before you make a decision on Jaylen Waddle's contract. Depending on what Tua does, that could be a big percentage of your cap, either open or closed, right? So there's a lot of moving pieces. So, you know, you draft this kid in the fourth round, and maybe he comes in and he makes you feel better about not being able to re-up Jaylen Waddle or not being able to re-up Cedric Wilson. Or maybe you move on from Tyreek Hill a little bit early because you feel good about what this kid can do. I don't know, but the receiver market right now, there's a bubble, right? They talk about the housing bubble, right? There's a receiver market bubble. Eventually it's going to pop. These guys are getting paid in crazy, crazy amount of money. Eventually teams are going to go, you know what? Screw it. I'm going with the third round pick from Texas Tech over, you know, whoever. And you're going to see this market drip a little bit. So again, I think it's a good future investment. It's a solid pick for right now. He has a role on this team that he can carve out, but fans need to temper their expectations and understand what type of player they're getting here. This is not Deebo Samuel. This is not someone even remotely in the same stratosphere as Deebo Samuel, but he's still solid. I really, you know, again, I think fans just need to have realistic expectations for a rookie out of Texas Tech.
Yeah. Cause in the Big 12 conference, every wide receiver has great stats. All they do is go up and down the field. Nobody plays defense. Yep. They all got great stats, so you can't just look at that. Now we go to round seven, and it's round seven, folks. So, but the first pick was linebacker out of Cale Cameron Good, and here's what you're hoping for. Can he contribute on special teams in year one, and can he beat out for him to do that, can he beat out someone like Sam Aguayvan or Brennan Scarlett or Riley? And I don't know the answer, but that's your best hope with a linebacker round seven. Can you beat out one of those three and be a contributor on special teams? Dante, what are your thoughts?
Well, this is the player that I had to Google when they got drafted because Cal film was very hard to come by this year, and he was not expected to be a draft player. So, again, like not really a player that I had a ton on. I watched one game. That's all I had. Again, Pac-12 film was brutal to find this year, as it is every year. I mean, look, I think best case scenario is exactly what you said. You're getting a special teams contributor, a guy who's long, a guy who's lean and fast, and you're hoping that he can figure out how to block on punts and cover kicks, right, as a seventh round pick. If he does end up playing on defense, I think you're probably looking at an Andrew Van Ginkle type player, somebody who's a bit more of an edge linebacker hybrid than a pure linebacker or a pure edge. I think he's got some pass rush ability. He played outside linebacker for Cal. I think you like the length. I think you like the body type. Don't know how much athleticism you're getting there. You're not getting a lot of production. Again, it's a seventh round pick. So, really a lot of seventh rounders are basically priority free agents that teams want to make sure that they get in on first before other teams can jump in. So
You know, he's going to have to beat out some guys for a roster spot. I think, you know, probably that Duke Riley, Andrew Van Ginkel role will probably be closer to what he's good at. I'm honestly not expecting him to make the roster. I'm assuming he'll be more of a practice squad type player, I think, this year. I think Miami will feel a little bit more comfortable given that they kept that defensive staff around and they know a lot of the linebackers who are on the back end of that roster from last year. So I'm assuming that he'll be a practice squad guy. But again, you're throwing darts at every round of the draft. You're throwing blind darts at the seventh round of the draft. So we'll see what happens. If he can be a good special teams contributor for you, that's about as good as you can ask for from a seventh round pick.
And then with the last pick in round seven, they had pick number 247. I just laughed because things got interesting. You got a segment.
I laughed too.
You had a segment of Dolphins fans who started getting nervous how they're going to undermine our starting quarterback. How dare they take another quarterback? Skylar Thompson, Kansas State, who is a third quarterback if he makes the roster. Here's what I'll say about this kid. When it comes to traits, he ain't got the strongest arm. He's not the tallest guy. He doesn't have any traits that you say, this guy, you know, is your prototypical NFL quarterback. What he does have, though, is a little bit of guts. He's one of those guys who plays with his heart on his sleeve. He's got guts. He's a gutsy guy. Now, is he ever going to be an NFL starting quarterback? You know, probably not. Safe bet. You never really know, but it's a safe bet, probably not. But he's a kid who, you know, leaves it all on the field, I think. He can make some plays with his legs, and maybe in a year or two, he's a solid number two quarterback if things break the right way. But that's, you know, probably his ceiling and all you're hoping for. And it's just one of those things, Dante, where they say, you know, in every draft, you probably should take a shot on a quarterback because you never know. And that's what Miami did here, which they've never done. The number of quarterbacks they've drafted since 83 in Marino, like, you can count on one hand, which is mind-blowing, I think. It actually is mind-blowing. You can count them on one hand. They're trading for guys, paying for guys. They never draft anybody. So the fact they took one here around seven, it's a lottery ticket. It's worth the shot. Maybe he's a long-term number two. And whatever, but they had nothing to lose. And I wouldn't read any more into this pick than that, but I know some fans will. So what are your thoughts on Skylar Thompson?
Yeah, my initial reaction when he was drafted was just to tweet, oh no, you know, because I was just like,
I knew it was coming.
Yeah, I really just did not feel like dealing with that. I just hopped off like 14 hours of live streaming. And I was like, you know what? I don't have time for this. And I just tweeted that. And then I went and did other stuff. But I did a film review on Thompson. And you know what? Like, I kind of get it, right? Like, it's a seven-round pick, like you said. He's a quarterback, too. I don't think he's ever going to be a starter. He's not better than Tua. He's not better than Teddy Bridgewater either. I mean, he's going to have to compete with Chris Streveler for that third quarterback in preseason. You know, we'll see if they even keep three quarterbacks. Maybe he ends up on the practice squad. I don't know what they end up doing there. We'll see what this staff wants to do. The last staff was more two quarterbacky than three. And then
this
they kept
one guy.
This is
going to be a three quarterback staff.
Yeah, I think, and honestly, I would argue every team should be a three quarterback staff. But the last half was kind of two and then one on the practice squad. We'll see if they keep three on the roster. So he's going to have to compete with Chris Streveler. When I watched his film, I get it, right? If I was a Kyle Shanahan disciple and Mike McDaniel and I sat down and I watched Skylar Thompson's film, there would be things that I would take away from that I would say to myself, okay, these are translatable specifically to my offense, right? He has experience taking snaps under center and working long play action concepts, turning his back to the defense. His best work is in the quick game where he can kind of distribute the ball and play point guard and you know, give guys opportunities for yak and stuff. They had a couple solid playmakers at Kansas State, especially this past season. We'll see some of them coming out in the next draft class. But, you know, again, his ability to work play action concepts, his ability to work the quick game effectively, he's got a little bit of mobility to him. I don't think he's going to be a burner or, you know, really be a good scrambler or anything like that, but he can move around in the pocket. You know, he can step up under pressure, stuff like that. You know, when you're scouting quarterbacks who are probably going to be seventh round picks or undrafted free agents, you're looking to see, okay, does this guy have what are his strengths? And then do they translate to my scheme? And the answer to that question, I think for Skylar Thompson and Mike McDaniel is probably yes. Will he make this roster? Will he be the quarterback three? I don't know. He's got competition there. We'll see. Doesn't have great arm strength. He's old as hell. Not the best decision maker on the planet. You know, he got away with a lot this year. He only threw four interceptions this past season at Kansas State. A couple of them dropped, a couple of them, you know, that number might have creeped closer to 10 in the NFL. So, again, like, I don't know, you know, how much to project him. I get it, right? It's a seventh round pick. I agree with you, right? Like, I like throwing darts in the seventh round at quarterbacks. You just never know. And even if you end up with a good quarterback too, I mean, those guys get paid a lot of money, right? Like, that is a valuable asset to have on your team. I mean, Chase Daniel's going to make a bajillion dollars playing in four games for his NFL career. You know, if you get that guy in the seventh round, right, and you don't have to pay him Chase Daniel's money because you feel good about his ability to be your backup at that level, I mean, like, that's a hit on a pick, at least in my opinion. And again, you don't have to pay Teddy Bridgewater another contract or anything like that if Skylar Thompson comes along. So you've got nothing to lose. There's no downside, really, to any seventh round pick. But I think specifically with a quarterback, because you've got a little bit more ceiling, you're probably, you know, 95% chance you're going to miss on that pick. You might as well swing for the fences. And that's what they did here. You know, do I think Skylar Thompson's going to be the long-term quarterback two in Miami?
Probably not.
Probably not, but you never know. He could be.
Seventh-round pick.
Yeah, he could be. And I think it's encouraging, again, and I've listened to a lot of scouts and GMs talk over the years, and something that, you know, you hear consistently is that sometimes we just draft quarterbacks to make sure we still know how to scout them. And we still know what we're looking for, and we still understand how that process works, because eventually, if we're successful enough, we're probably going to have to take another one or something like that, right? You'll hear scouts and GMs say that, is that they'll just take swings at the bat at quarterback so they can keep themselves mentally sharp at that position. It's the NFL's most important position. And you know what? The Dolphins' current quarterback, as much as I'm confident in his ability to be good this year, and I think he'll be fine, it's a do or die year. There's a chance he'll die out there. I don't think he will. I'm not predicting it. I think he's going to have a good year, but you never know, right? Never know. And, you know, you just want to stay sharp, right? So I think this pick, it's fine. It is what it is.
Well, here's the thing with Skyler, because there was a few games this year I might have put some money down on Kansas State. One of the games was week one against Stanford, where I thought – and they won the game, Kansas State, but I thought this kid was awful, and I didn't know him much from Adam. But I knew that was a good matchup for them. And I think it was like 9 for 13 passing, one interception, no touch. I'm like, this guy stinks. And he got hurt in the game. I'm like, whatever, whatever. Then a few weeks later, a month later, he comes back from injury. They play Oklahoma. I didn't put money on this game, but I should have. He was like 350 yards, three touchdowns, interceptions. Yeah. I'm like, what are that? He's a roller coaster. He's, you know, some games he ain't going to give you much. But when he's on, he's going to look like Montana. But you don't get that every week. So that's why he's in round seven. Worth taking a flyer, because if he gets the right coach in his ear who can maybe coach him up a little bit, he could be that long-term number two. But we'll see. It's worth a shot. You never know with quarterbacks. And you never have enough of them either. Lord knows we've been searching for one since the year 2000. Before we go to the undrafted free agents real quick, just a shout-out from our sponsors at Manscaped. Everyone go to manscaped.com. Use a promo code DolphinsTalk, save 20% in your order, get free shipping. Whether it's lip balm, shampoo, body wash, ear and nose hair trimmer, or if you want the lawnmower 4.0 to take care of business down there, go to manscaped.com, use a promo code DolphinsTalk, save 20%, get free shipping, and they have some of the best products on the planet for all of your needs, and everyone should go to manscaped.com. So, undrafted free agents. There's a couple guys on this list, Dante, that I don't think are bad. Let me open up this list here. Let's see. I got to find my list. I lost my list. Now, one of the guys they did take, they already cut yesterday.
They failed a physical.
Ty Clary was his name?
Yeah.
Failed a physical, so he was let go, which he was one who could play a little center, so it was kind of not that great. First name I want to talk about is the offensive lineman out of Arizona State, Kellen Deesh, who I think some people, if I'm saying that name right, thought might get picked. And he can play left tackle, right tackle. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I had a draftable grade on him coming out. I think he's the best UDFA that they're going to get this year in this class. Athletic, long, good size. He's a perfect scheme fit. I mean, I had a late day three grade on him, right? Had a six on him. He is a UDFA, but I like him as a guy who can kick inside if you need him to kick inside, or he can play tackle. He ran a 4.89 40-yard dash at 6.7301. So he's incredibly athletic. He ran a 4.43 20-yard shuttle. which is a really, really good time for offensive linemen. So he's athletic, he can move, and that's what you want in this outside zone system that Mike McDaniel is going to be implementing into Miami. So scheme fit wise, I think, you know, a lot of people have been like, oh, maybe he'll push Austin Jackson for right tackle.
No.
I know, for a lot of reasons, but the chief among them is I don't think he's a tackle. I think you're going to have to figure him out at either center or guard. He's got 32-inch arms. Not great, you know, and he's really light in the pants too. He's only 301, doesn't have the best anchor in the world. I don't think he's going to push anybody for right tackle. I think that he's going to kick inside, or at least I would kick him inside. But I like the athleticism. I think this is a player that you can roster, and hopefully you can get him to be a very versatile backup. So I really like this. I think that him and then there's one other player that I think could make the roster really. I think he's got a shot, perfect scheme fit. I like this one.
The one I want to talk about as well is running back out of South Carolina, Zaquandre White. I believe he started off as a linebacker at Florida State, if I remember, then he transferred to South Carolina and became a running back. Miami at running back now with the signing of Sony Michel, it probably changes things and hurts this kid's chances. But what do you think about White?
Yeah, I mean, it really does hurt his chances, right? Because he was kind of – he had the opportunity to be that downhill, tough, rugged power back who comes in on short yardage situations, who, you know, punches the defense in the mouth, and that's probably going to be Sony Michel now. I mean, I don't think you hand out that contract if it's not going to be him, right? So for White right now, I think he went from maybe I can be a really good complement to Miles Gaskin, you know, Mosert and Edmonds to, okay, maybe I have to go win reps on special teams as a punt blocker. You know, maybe I have to go win reps on kickoff return and make some tackles and stuff like that. So I think the Michel signing really, really hurt his chances. I didn't really love his film. I watched like a couple highlight reels. I think he's a UDFA player, just not a very good athlete. Frankly, I think he's teetering on the edge of NFL athlete. But he's quick, he's smart, and he's powerful. And at the running back position, that can earn you a lot because there are a lot of guys who are not the best athletes in the world who become, you know, very okay running backs. So I think that's probably what you're looking at with him. I think the Michel signing, though, really killed his role as far as being a potential RB4 for this team if they decided to keep four running backs. I think he's going to have to go from focus there to special teams.
Yeah, and I think the other name of the player you're probably intrigued about out of Oregon can play safety, corner, Verone McKinley. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, this is the other player that I think can make the roster. Another guy that I had a fifth round grade on who went undrafted. I like him. I think he's just, you know what, he's smart. He knows how to play football. He understands his assignments. Is he going to blow you away with size? No. Is he a great athlete? No. But he's in the right place at the right time.
Makes plays.
Yeah. I mean, he's on the ball a lot. He's got really good ball production. Again, he's a back end of the roster guy. This is not a player who's going to see snaps or that, right? I think you can get good special teams reps out of him. If you have to put him out there, I think he'll be okay enough that you're, you know, fine, right? Again, like he's a deep zone safety and a cover two. He's not going to be that single high player who's just going to stand back there and erase angles and do that. He's not Javon Holland, right? It's just he's not that player. But I think he's fine, right? I think you can get good special teams reps from him. And when he's on the field, I think he'll be in the right place at the right time. He's got a really good understanding of defensive assignments, his own assignments, where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there. I think he's really solid for a UDFA. There's not really anyone else in the class that stands out to me. I like Ty Clary's chances, who just got cut because he was the second center on the team.
I know.
Yeah, right? So it was like, well, you know, I mean, he's got nobody to beat out, frankly. So maybe he'll make the team. But he got cut because he failed the physical, so can't talk about him. I think, like, Deesh, McKinley, not a huge White guy, but I get why Dolphins fans are excited about him. I say, like, those are probably the three best guys. I don't think we see any of the small school guys make the roster, but, yeah, I don't know. You never know.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the rest of this list. No one really to mention. Maybe the other offensive lineman out of Minnesota – Blaze Andres, he's got a chance because the offensive line's so bad. I mean, yeah, he's got a chance, I guess, just to maybe win a spot. But, yeah, other than those guys, I don't know if anybody else has a shot here. You know, some of these guys will make the practice squad and sort of hold on there. But we'll see. Now, I want to close out the show just talking about the draft in general. Give me three or four teams that you thought had a great draft and three or four teams that you thought just were lost when it comes to the draft. I got my short little list here. I can go first if you need a few seconds, but who are give me three or four teams that had a good draft.
I think the teams that really stood out to me were, and Dolphins fans are going to hate me for this, the Jets, I thought, had a really good draft. Yep. I really thought they stuck the landing. That first pick was a little but I think they stuck the landing after that. And obviously Sauce is a great player. I mean, the Ravens, they were like peering into my head. I mean, I feel like they had my draft board in their draft room. So it's kind of hard for me to bash them. I thought they had a really good draft. So those are the two teams off the top of my head with really good drafts. For bad drafts, man, I have no idea what they're doing down in Glendale, Arizona. I got no idea. That's a very, very confusing draft. Why are you trading a first-round pick for Marquise Brown? Why are you drafting another tight end when you only have one tight end on the field for 70% of your snaps? You spent a premium pick on that player, and he's a good player. You just paid Zach Ertz. I'm very confused about what Arizona's doing. I don't quite understand where they're going with that. I think another team like the Bears, like, look, I know you don't have a lot of talent on that team and you're just trying to draft BPA, and I get it. But, man, you are on the damn clock with that quarterback and you got to figure that out soon. And as two guys who have sat here and watched a team botch the development of a young quarterback,
they gave him no help.
Yeah, regardless of your opinion on Tua, whether you thought he was going to be the guy at first or not, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they didn't give him any help, and I'm not saying that should be some – you know, grand excuse. They're not giving, they're doing the Chicago's doing the same thing to Justin Fields right now. They're doing it right now. So those are the two bad ones that stick out to me, the Bears and the Cardinals, and then the Jets and the Ravens probably towards the top, again, off the top of my head, of draft classes that I really liked.
All right. So for my three that were bad, Chicago top of the list for the same reasons we just went through. New England, I have no idea what they're doing anymore. And I know the guys won a whole bunch of Super Bowls. God bless them. Going to the Hall of Fame. Greatest coach ever. He might even pass the record for Shula for most wins. Can't knock any of that. That draft, and it goes past the first pick. Jack Jones, we spoke about. We had him going round 7 on draft. He's taking him like a round 4 or 3, whatever. What are you doing? He's lost. Washington, not that they necessarily picked guys that were bad. They just, I don't know why they're trading back to take a small wide receiver when they could have stayed put and got someone who's probably a little bit better, where they really didn't gain much by sliding back. I have no idea what Washington was doing. And the last one, just because, A, I don't like their pick in round 1, and then they took a quarterback in round 3. I don't think it's any good. Atlanta, I'm just not a huge fan of what they did either. God bless Ritter. Here's the thing. Atlanta will be picking 1 or 2 next year, and they will be taking a quarterback. Put it down in permanent marker. So they wasted a third-round pick on a guy who's not your answer, because Marcus Mariota is going to stink for them. Their whole roster stinks, and they're going to be picking 1 or 2, and they're going to take the kid from Ohio State or the kid from Alabama. So why they took a quarterback in round 3, whatever. For ones that were good, Ravens, like you said, home run. Giants, I thought, home run. Jets were good. I think some people are giving them are overrating it some. It's good. It's one of the top 3 or 4 in this draft. I think some people are going overboard saying now they're going to win, you know, whatever. And the one I probably like the best, even without the trade, Philadelphia, without the trade for AJ Brown.
Yeah,
they
had a good day. Yeah.
Hit a great draft. They got N'Kobe Dean. If he's hurt or not, who cares? Where they got him was great. Round 1 pick there was great. I just thought Philadelphia, when you factor in the trade as well, just absolutely killed it. So, yeah, I mean, we're on the same thought process there with who had good ones and bad ones. But Chicago – taking 2 secondary players when you have a young quarterback with no wide receivers to speak of.
Bold move. And I like both of the corners that they drafted, right? So it's weird. Exactly. Like, I don't want to sit up there and be like, well, they drafted crap players, so the draft sucks. But it's like, man, like.
But if they added weapons in the offseason, then you can do that. The fact that you had no weapons in free agency doesn't let you do this now. That's the problem. You have to marry the offseason with the draft. They didn't do it.
No.
Fields is going to, you know, Bears, look, I can tell you right now, especially after I saw the schedule, the 3 teams who will be picking high next year, Atlanta's 1, the Jets, not because they're necessarily worse, because the first 8 weeks of their schedule, they're going 1-7 or 0-8 if you look at that schedule. It is absolutely brutal. Dante, look at the first 8 weeks. You tell me where the Jets are going to win. Hold on. This schedule first 8 weeks, I want you to give me more than one win.
All right.
Let me open it up quick. I'm going to give you this. Okay, where's the order? I need an order. Come on. Give me this. Google. Come on, Google. Here we go. This one, 2022. Okay, week one, Ravens.
No.
Week two at the Browns. Let's say Watson's playing. If he's not playing, they have a chance. If Watson's playing, good night.
All right, no.
Week three, Cincinnati. Week four at Pittsburgh.
I think they could beat Pittsburgh.
Okay, possible.
Yeah.
That's your one.
That's a winnable game.
Week five, Miami. Week six at the Packers. Week seven at the Broncos. Week eight, New England. Week nine, the Bills. Bye week. Week 11, New England. Tell me, they better hope Watson's suspended. Otherwise, they are screwed up until week 12.
That's a tough stretch, man. That's tough.
Brutal.
That's really tough.
Exactly. So even if they're improved this year, you might not see that till later in the year, because at the end of the year, it gets a little softer. They end with, they go Chicago, Minnesota, Bills, Lions, Jacksonville, Seattle. So in like December or from November 27th on, it gets a little bit easier. But that's Thanksgiving, okay?
Yeah.
Up until Thanksgiving, they're going to get destroyed, and that's going to wreck their confidence, and they might just – and the head coach, he might not even make it to Thanksgiving if they go 1-7, 0-8, or something like that. That's brutal for Zach Wilson. That's brutal for a team that has so many young players. So that's a team who will be picking 1, 2, or 3 next year. And you can mark that down. Atlanta, them, and who's the third team I was thinking of? Well, Chicago. Probably Chicago. Probably just because it's an offensive league and they have no offense.
They don't really have any defense either. I know they drafted defensive players, but they're that defense exactly. Really. Yeah, so.
And they got to play Rodgers twice. Even the Vikings aren't horrible. I mean, and then you got the Lions who seem to be on a slight uptick from just being awful to now maybe just being bad. It's like, yeah that's a – so – you can mark those three teams down in pen. In pen is top three, with Houston probably fourth. All right. So that's all for today's show. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Be sure to check out the website, dolphinstalk.com, for all your Miami Dolphins needs. Like I said with Tom there tonight, it's May. News is going to be slow. It's going to be few and far between. But we're still going to have content up, articles. We're going to have podcasts here and there. I'm trying to set up some interviews with people. So the content might not be 24/7. But we're going to be updating the site, as often as we can when it warrants. And there's still going to be news when it happens, because Lord knows with the Dolphins, there's always something happening. Good or bad, there's always something happening. So check that out. Be sure to follow Dante on Twitter, at Dante Colonelli, and at your draft website. What's that again?
BlueChipScouting.com.
Blue Chip Scouting. I forgot that. Yes. And just and you can follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk. Everyone have a great Sunday. We'll talk to you later. And folks, don't forget, let's put an end to highway profanity.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.